Okay, let's continue where we started last week. We discussed Rabbanus Avaroi. And the time period of Rabbanus Avaroi starts in the year 479. And we showed how Rabbanus Avaroi, really, they were the Mesadrim. And the way Ivan said it so aptly, so appropriately, I really liked what he said, that, you know, we find Rabbanus Avaroi, everything, not just they're filling in the holes, the missing pieces of the Gemara, or they put the headlines of where the Gemara is supposed to start, right, the two dots, or V'hilchasa in the Gemara they put in, or Zacheinu L'chaim they put in Davening, or Kaddish they put in between Shvi and Maftir, or even the Halachas Ketanos, all these back of the Masechtas, Halachas Ketanos, Mezuzah, Sefer Torah, Tefillin, Tzitzis, where we know there's no machlekes, nobody, none of the Rishonim arguing that, but yet it was written after the Yerushalmi. We found that in the Magen Mishnah says it's written after the Yerushalmi. The machlekes between the Halachas Ketanos and the Yerushalmi, you pass them like the Yerushalmi. So clearly it was written after the Yerushalmi, not in the Gemara, does not mention anywhere of Halachas Ketanos in the Gemara, nowhere. The Gemara doesn't quote a brighter from that, nothing. So clearly it happened in the Rabbanus Avaroi. So whether all these things, and Ivan put it very appropriately, that they really were the sadranim. They were mesader everything. They put everything in the right order, and now we're ready to learn all these books from the Amoraim. They put the Gemara in order, they fixed up the Gemara, they put the Davening in order, they put the Minhagim in order, they put the Kriyas HaTorah in order. They put everything in order. That is what they accomplished. And that's a huge amount. Yeah, they only lived 120 years, according to Shira, according to others, it was 200 years. It was a short time period. But it was an important time period. Then you can have the Gaonim and the Rishonim taking that basis of the Gemara and the Minhagim and the Halachas and going further from there. And I think it's very well summed up by the Sefer Tanoim V'Amoraim, number one on the sheet, V'achreim Rabbanus Avaroi Shebeschusen Mintru Shemayim Menir Kaoretz. Okay, that's a quote that everything was worth because of them. Ad Rav Gide V'Rav Simoine Shayisayf Sevaroi V'lo Yasifu V'lo Yifligu Medaitim Klum Elo Tiknu Prokim Shebechol Tunei Kesedron. They put everything prokim. They put everything in order. That's what Rabbanus Avaroi did. Very, very crucial. Now, one thing which I find quite interesting is they played a very important role. From themselves, they almost said nothing. We don't have very few names. It's still a 120-year period. Very few names. Maybe 10, 50 names of Rabbanus Avaroi that we have. Maybe 20 names. Not much is written in their names. They don't say anything, don't quote anything. Why is it that they're taking such a backseat? Okay, it makes sense because they just misader everything. But why is it, you know, interesting that they found that their job is not to add on, right? Not to add on anything to the Gemara and not to, you know, Mati asked the question, how do they know they're Rabbanus Avaroi? Why didn't they just add on to the Gemara? Ravina Ravashi, the last Ravina wrote the Gemara, they should have added on. Like Abai and Rava added on, everybody else added on. How did they know that, okay, that's not our role now, let's just be Mesader everything in order to pass it on to the next generation? What was it? So I'm thinking that perhaps there's something unique which happened in that time period, which Rav Shira Gaon alludes to it. Remember, Shira Gaon was the closest historical, chronologically. He wrote it, 200 years later, 300 years later? And he writes like this. He talks about Rabbanus Avaroi, and he writes over there, number two, V'haven shnei shmads v'tzoros b'soif malchus parsayim. At the end of the Persian rule, at the end of the Sasanian Empire, what's the end, by the way? Well, we know that the Arab conquest happened in the year 620, 630. So towards the end, 560, 570, 540, 530, the last 100 years of the Persian rule, says Rav Shira Gaon, V'haven shnei shmad, it was shmad, v'tzoros, v'soif malchus parsayim. V'lei havu yecholin lemikvei pilka. They couldn't learn anymore. V'asuvei mesivo. And they couldn't sit in the Mesifta. They couldn't establish the house of learning. Umedaber minagoinim. They couldn't do that anymore. Ad boser kamashonim. Until finally, after a few years, the osir rabbonon dilonon mi pumpadisa, till our rabbis came from pumpadisa, lisviva is nardo, limdinosa de prois shvar. that they couldn't be anymore in Pumbedisa. Sura, we know they're already not there for a while, for 30 years. But then they couldn't be in Pumbedisa either. And they couldn't have the Masifta. And they couldn't have any learning. Until they found a new place. Let's go to Proy Shvar, which was near Nardo, which is more the center. And let's reopen the Masifta over there. And then he speaks about, you know, the end of the... Then he speaks really about the Goinim. And that's number 2A. The Elon Goinim. You have Proy Shvar over there? Where's Proy Shvar? Next to Nardo. Next up, my Nardo. It's got to be there. Okay. So at the end of the day, it's interesting that now look, just to finish number 1A, 2A, what he says. And then he goes to the Goinim. V'ilun Goinim, the Havim Mimdisa, the Lona B'Pumbedisa, these Goinim that were, you know, in Pumbedisa, Rav Shrira was also in Pumbedisa. So in our country, in Pumbedisa, Bosse Ilon Malin B'Soiv Malchis Pasayim, after the end of the Persian time period, Bishnas Toftov Kub Shana, which is the year 590, Molach Machanan Mashkayo. So the Rav Shrira Goyim L'Shitasai, we'll discuss at length next week, Rav Shrira Goyim holds that after three generations, after 110 years, three and four generations, that was the end of the Rabbanu Savaroi. And when they left Proy Shvar to go back to Pumbedisa, when Rav Chanan Me'ashkayet, he calls him Mar, right? You know, all the Goyim are called Mar. Mar Yehudoi Goyim, Mar Nutronoi Goyim, Mar Shri, all Mar Goyim. So when Rav Chanan Me'ashkayet went back, 590, that's when the Goyim started. Then he says, Bosre Molach, we're going to see him through the end, why I underlined it. Rav Mori, Zekenenu Brede Ma Barav Dimi Sargoy. And then Rav Mori ruled in Pumbedisa. And Rav Mori was one of the Rabbanu Savaroi who were still in Proy Shvar. And then he speaks about Yom HaMolach B'Sura, then he went back to Sura, and then Rav Mori was in Ardo, and then it says, Yom of Yosef Muhammad Lailam. The last line, that's when Muhammad went into the world, the year 620, so that's already after, according to Rav Shira Goyim, that's after the time of the Rabbanu Savaroi. Rav Shira Goyim happens to hold the Rabbanu Savaroi end in the year 589, when Rav Chanan Mashkaya leaves Proy Shvar and goes up to Pumbedisa. My big question is, we're not regular, we don't tend to think that there were any difficult times during the Babylonians. When the Jews lived in Babylon, it was always really good. Nowhere near what it was in SSO, clearly not. They had a few skirmishes, a few things. They never really had. They always lived in almost in relative peace and security. Well, it turns out that this time period of the Rabbanu Savaroi was almost 100 years with tsaros and persecutions, and the Jews were disturbances and unsettled. It was a very unsettling times. Nowhere near the tsaros and the persecutions what they had in Israel, but these 100 years, from the year 480, 490, until the year 560, 570, these 80, 90 years, with very difficult times for the Jews in Babel. And Atkele Kach, the Rav Shira Goyim says, they had to close the yeshiva in Pumbedisa. They had nowhere to go until they found a place, Proy Shvar, let's open a new Masifta. What were the disturbances? What was the political situation? And why? And I think that's the reason why the Rabbanu Savaroi, that's why they perhaps could not add on new things, bring new things. They lived in times where they didn't have that opportunity because they were under tsaros. And therefore, they can be misader everything, that they can do. But to go and add on to the Gemara new things, that perhaps was too difficult of a time, the disturbances were too great, the times were too unsettling. That's what took place in Rabbanu Savaroi. Who was persecuting? Exactly. Who was persecuting them? So in order to look a little historically, there's a fascinating Seder Olam Zuta. I should wait till Mati comes in. But there's a fascinating Seder Olam Zuta, and then you can learn a little bit about the inner workings of what was going on in Babel. Remember, Babel, you had the Reish Masifta, right? He was the head of the yeshiva. He was the Gol Hador. Everybody listened to him. You had the Reish Galusa. He was the political man. The Reish Galusa always came from Malchus Beis David. They had this for 500 years. They lived in relative security, independence. Nobody is persecuting them. What is Rav Shrira Goyim talking about? So look in Seder Olam Zuta.
Proy Shvar They had peace there?
Yeah, because remember, Babel had different sections. So the north, pocket, and the south. It was a pocket.
It was just going serious.
But they weren't going serious.
So again, it doesn't, again,
they were on the run.
From the fact that they found, you know, some relative security in Plois Shavar, it obviously wasn't, you know, it wasn't like by the Romans, where it was from the top down, from Rome, persecuting the Jews. It was more like, okay, you know, the local governor is starting up with us, we gotta go somewhere else. Now, what were these disturbances that caused them to close the yeshiva in Pumbedisa, close the yeshiva in Sura, and they had to go down to Plois Shavar? And I think that's the reason, perhaps, why the Rabbanan Sabaroi didn't add things, because they were just misada things. They lived in times where it was the first time in Babel, maybe even the only time, unless we see later on, but the first time in Babel where they literally were persecuted, unsettled, they had to close the two main yeshivas, and had no place to go, like what he says.
Why didn't they leave then?
Where are they going to go?
300 years later, all of a sudden, the whole thing went to the
Holy. Okay, okay, okay. So they figured, let's go to Plois Shavar. And again, it wasn't, I don't think it was sanctioned, you know, officially. It was more like, these are difficult times. What is the persecution? What are we talking about over here? So we can see, what persecution were there? There was no invasion of the Romans. We're not invading the Persians. What persecutions are we talking about? So if you look in Seder Olam Zuta, which, not clear who wrote it. Some say it was written early on. Others say it was written later. You know, it's not clear who wrote it, but it's an old book. So it says like this. Number 3. He talks about Rav Chanina. In the time, Rav Chanina lived in the year 500. Was from the early Rabbanan Savaroi, the second generation of Rabbanan Savaroi. Let's read it together. Uveyoymei, in his day and age, klein the Beis David. It was an embarrassment to the Beis David. What's the Beis David? The Reish Galusa. Right. V'hochi havle. This is the story. I'll tell you the story. Itse de Rav Huna Reish Galusa. Rav Huna Reish Galusa, not to be confused with Rav Huna from the Gemara, obviously. The names keep on coming back. Right. The wife of Rav Huna, the Reish Galusa, brate de Marav Chanina Reish Mesifta have. She was the daughter of Rav Chanina, the head of the Mesifta. So the head, the Rosh Hashiva, the Gal Adar's son-in-law, was the Reish Galusa. Rav Chanina Gavra have. Rav Chanina obviously was the main Gavra in Babel. Upirish v'ozel dine the Reish Galusa, and the Reish Galusa appointed a dayan. His son-in-law appointed a judge, Lemasa de Rav Chanina, Reish Mesifta. And he went to the town of Rav Chanina, where he was Reish Mesifta. Ubole Mevet Perke, and he wanted to go give a shir, Paskin, Vele Shafke, Reish Mesifta. The Reish Mesifta says, excuse me, who appoints the Dayanim? Is he ready to struggle already? Who appoints the Dayanim? The Reish Mesifta or the Reish Galusa? You, my son-in-law, you're going to appoint the Dayan? I'm against it. He appointed him anyway. And the Reish Mesifta, the Shver said, he's not giving a shiur over here, I'm not letting him. So, the Reish Galusa was a powerful person. As lekamesh Reish Galusa, the Reish Galusa went, upokid Reish Galusa, v'shoda, he called him, v'asel le Reish Mesifta, and he sent messenger to the Reish Mesifta's father-in-law, upokid alei, and he told him, you better come see me. V'oisvei bahade pile maso, kule leila. And he comes to him at night, to the town of the Reish Galusa, and he makes him wait an entire night. His shver, his father-in-law, he makes him wait an entire night outside the door. L'mochi asu pakeh v'shamtei l'chomazi the dikneh, whatever they did, I don't know what that means. V'loi l'mekin l'yushpiza. And didn't give him anything to eat. Then just basically ignored him and embarrassed him. So the Reish Galusa started up with his father-in-law, the Reish Mesifta, over political appointments. V'ozo Reish Mesifta. So Reb Chanina, Reish Mesifta. Yosef, he went with Beit Knesset in the shul. Rapsi, big shul. In other words, he started crying. He shed a tear. He was hurt. And death happened to the family of the Reish Galusa, his own son-in-law. And they all died in one night. The plague, they all died. And Mazutra survived. He was in the mother's krese, in his mother's womb. In other words, the Reish Galusa, Huna, left behind a pregnant wife, who was Rav Chanina's daughter. So Rav Chanina had a pregnant daughter. B'chazia, and sure enough, goes further, line number 12, V'chozyahu leila ma'rabchinin b'chalmo, and Rabchinin had a dream, da'alabusne da'alze, he went to a big forest, v'shokal nalgo, and he took a axe, v'kotel l'chol alze, da'havenve, and he chopped off all the trees in the forest, u'foshcha da'alze zutra, t'chois ara, dali nagel miktele. In other words, and it was one little tree left over. V'ose gabro sumko saba, and an old man, red, a reddish complexion man came, Amalei told him, next paragraph, I'm not David Melech Yisrael. I'm King David. I'm David Melech Yisrael. And this is my forest. In other words, what are you doing? This is my Malchus based David. Remember, Reish Galusa, we're all descendants of David Melech. So this is my forest. What are you chopping down everything? At my havloch badai de Catalino. Mechayev afkosev adrinu lampe lache, etc., etc. Amalei told him, L'rabin, to his Rebbe, to David Melech. Poshm based David Chad, is anybody left over? Amulei, loy poshm benen chad shum anosh, ela bratoch de mabro. Nobody's left after tonight besides your daughter who's pregnant. Vozal, vegono, ol bova dilo bemitro vishim shah di yolda. And I want you to protect her rain and shine, rain and sun and sun until she gives birth. The chad yolda, line number 6. The chad yolda, Talzin ampe bedalke, v'shakla be, v'kari v'shavi gavarabo. And when she gives birth, make sure you take this child and bring him up, because he's going to be the next Reish Galusa. He's the only remnant left of Malchus Beis David, Marzutra in Bovel. Sure enough, line number 7, A, by the A, by the star, chat chosin havi le Beis David. There was a son-in-law, who's not related, but a son-in-law, v'hai havi Rav Pachro shmei. His name was Rav Pachro. Katchazei de mois beis David, when he saw nobody's left, shokal memoina, he took money, v'sheich de lemalko, v'shav yereisha. The only time that the Reish Galusa was not the Malchus beis David was Rav Pachro, who was a son-in-law, and he bought it off. He took the Reish Galusa for himself. V'kadavim mazutra batez of shonim, when mazutra was 15 years old, ozel hu v'reish mesifte legabe malko, so him and the Reish mesifte, which is his grandfather, with Rav Chanina, went to the king, he presented him to the king, v'shagve v'shenusim in Rav Pachre, and sure enough, they took it away from Rav Pachre, and they gave it to the rightful heir, the grandson. So Mazutra, Zutra, who was the son of Huna, who was killed by his father-in-law, well, not really killed, by the death thrillers of his father-in-law, became the next Reish Galusa. Now look what he writes. Rav Pachre, Aile, Dudvo benachre, and Rav Pachre had a fly went into his nose, v'itpach, and it went into, I guess, caused him an infection, at the mace. That's when he died. Mushumachi, tzairin de beis David, dudva al chusmehu. So that's why this, one of the, Goinim writes, so that's why the royal seal of the Reish Galusa has a fly in the royal seal. Because that's the one imposter that tried to take over the Reish Galusa. That's what got him. That's what did him under. And therefore the royal seal had a fly. This all happened at Rabbanu Savroi. There was some trouble with the Reish Galusa until the rightful one came. Now, listen what happened. That's a very nice story. Beautiful. Look at number 4. Ischazale amude de noro. So this Marzutra had a vision of a fiery pillar. V'nafku, in other words, he saw luck was on his side. He had fire on his side, whatever that means, a fiery pillar. He had protection. Nafku b'hadei, dalad meyo gavin. He amassed an army of 400 people. V'avdu krava al pasai. And he started fighting against the Persian government. V'idis malchusa, and he took control of the kingdom in that area. Mazutra, yeah. V'gova gziato zayin shin. And 7 years he had complete independence in Proishvar, where he was complete independence for 7 years. V'sayv zayin shin, after 7 years, chatu hanoch de natke, then the people that were with him sinned, the habibade were with him, they went off the path, they started drinking wine, hanging out with immorality, with women, and his pillar of fire disappeared. Listen to this. V'naktu pasoi. The Persians took control, took him. V'katlu, and they killed Mazutra. V'tzalvua, and they crucified him. L'reish gelusa Mazutra. They crucified the Reish Gelusa Mazutra. U'l'reish Mesifta. And the head of the Mesifta, who is that? His grandfather, B'chanina. Al Gishra de Mechuza. They hung them on the bridge of Mechuza next to Narda over the Chidekel. Pocket Malka, Vishav Yamasa Reish Gelusa. He took everybody captive. Uvahu Yemi, sure enough, listen to this. 4b, Uvahyemi Ital Mazutra Reish Gelusa, Zegen is Yena Lebracha. The day that Mazutra was killed, it's Yaleh Bra. He had a son. Not that his wife had a baby. V'kalyu, how they call him Mazutra al Shmei Davua. They called him Mazutra Ben Mazutra. V'yosef ben Atzavu, Mazutra ba Mazutra Reish Gelusa, Solek Netzol. He ran away to Israel. Va'al Yavareish Birkei. And they made him over there the Rosh Hashiva. There was something in Israel at that time. I had no idea, but they must have. V'shtos tafen un beizuch ben Abayis. Shtos habos un beizuch ben Mosheim Shmoyim. Ole Etzol v'yoreish Sanhedrin. Rav Guri v'achav Mazutra b'noi. There had still people learning Etzol. And he ran away to Etzol. What is the story? Why is... Okay, I understand there was a fight, inner fightings between the Reish Gelusa and the Reish Mesifta. I understand that. He appointed somebody he didn't like. That is going to happen.
200 years.
Correct. 200 years. That's the first time, by the way, and here it starts. But my question is, why is he fighting against the Persians? What is going on over here? So I saw in the Wikipedia, encyclopedia, you bring down this story, actually, you bring down this story, and they add one more thing. Look at number 5. Mazutra II, exilarch, born about 496, died about 520, ruled from 512 to 520. He was the son of Huna, who was appointed exilarch under Firuz, and he was born at a time when Bazdak endeavored to introduce communism in all of Persia. The following anecdote is told about his birth. He was born at the event preceding it. Mazutra's father was engaged in constant strife with his father-in-law, the school principal Machanina. Right? Mazutra's father was Huna. He was in a fight with the school principal, Reish Mesifta, Machanina, because the latter refused to obey orders issued by the exilarch. Chanina was accordingly punished for his disobedience, and being embittered and humiliated, he went into the prayer house at night, shed a dishful of tears, whereupon he fell asleep. He dreamt that he was in the cedar forest, engaged in felling trees. When he came to the last cedar tree, King David appeared and forbade him to fell it. On awakening, Chanina learned the entire house of the exilarch had perished, except his daughter was pregnant, had been spared. Soon after, she gave birth to a son, whom the grandfather named Mazutra, at the same time assuming personal charge of his training. Right? All this, we read this in the Seder Mazutra. Let's continue. During Mazutra's infancy, the exilarchate was administered by his brother-in-law, Marpacha, Opada. Oh yeah, that's the son-in-law, right? The latter bribed King Kobad in order that he might remain in office. But when Mazutra had reached the age of 15, his grandfather presented him to the king as a legitimate ruler, whereupon the monarch installed him as exilarch. Mapach that opposed this was killed by a fly, which ended his nuptial, and after that event, the exilarchs had a fly on their seal. Now you know the history.
Word for word.
Came out word for word from this Seder Mazutra. Now, Mazutra took up arms against the Persians and organized an uprising to oppose the introduction of communism. What is that? Although the king himself was in favor thereof. At the head of a company of 400 Jewish warriors, Mazutra advanced against opposing Persian forces. Battlefield men had furnished material for various legends, sold that pillar of fire, which preceded his army. In his first day, Mazutra found an independent Jewish state with Machoza as his residence. He ruled as independent king and imposed heavy tax on all non-Jews. In spite of the neighbor government, immorality spread among his people, whereupon the pillar of fire disappeared. Subsequent battle between Mazutra and the Persian form was defeated, and both he and his grandfather Chanina were taken prisoners, decapitated, their bodies suspended from crosses on the bridge at Machoza. Straight from the Seder Olam Zutra, beautiful, fantastic. What is this communism? What is going on? Independence? What is the strife? What's going on? So I'm going back, and we've said this in the past, but I see it now in a much better way. We found the Gemara, and this is the Sitzvar of the Darius Rishonim. We found the Gemara in Tainus that speaks about Rav Bruka, who was walking in the Shuka de Bay left. Eliyahu Navi meets him, and he tells him, who goes to Olam Haba? So even if Emid knows the last part of the Gemara, he says, these two people. So what are these two people? They're batchanim. They make jokes. The Gemara says, go to Olam Haba, yeah, because you make other people happy, you go straight to Olam Haba. That part of Gemara, everybody knows the last part. But he says, in the beginning, he says, that person over there, he goes to Olam Haba. He says, who's that person? So Rav Bruka goes over to him, and he says, who are you? She says, I'm a zandukna ano. I'm a jailhouse warden. She says, what do you do? She says, I'm in charge of the jail. And he says, are you Jewish? She said, yeah. He said, but you're wearing black shoes. And Jews don't wear black shoes. Right? The Gemara says, if you wear like the Goyim, Avodah Zarah, why are you wearing black shoes? And on that, you're not wearing tzitzis. What kind of Jew are you? She says, no, no, no. I don't want them to suspect me that I'm Jewish. So therefore, I dress like the Goyim. But really, I'm Jewish. I said, why? What do you do? What do you do? So I'm a jailhouse warden. She says, what's so good about that? He says, well, you know, they have men, they have ladies. And I want to make sure that they don't mix. There's rapes can occur in jails. I don't want that to happen. Matter of fact, he says, there was this Naira Amoroso that was in the jail, and they set their eyes on her, a Jewish girl, and I took some wine, and I put blood with wine all over her sheet, and they should think that she was menstruating, and they stayed away from her. And I make sure that they keep separate, and they don't do arayas, and they don't start up with other women, and that's what I'm doing. Now, what's the context? That's the Gemara in Tainus. If you actually want to see the story, it's worthwhile to look at what?
Famous one.
Look at number 6. Rav Bukhi Chazo, Havashchicha B'shukah Devei Left, Havashchicha Eliyahu Gabei, Amalei, Ika B'hai Shukah B'hai Amad Asi. There's someone over here that goes to Lama Ba. Amalei, Loi, told him no. Adachi Vachi Chazal Ugava, Davasayim Masani Uchmeh. He was wearing black shoes, V'loi Ram Echutcha, the Tchilta Glimei. He's not wearing any tchelis. He's not wearing any tzitzis. Amalei, Hai B'hai Amad Asi. He's going to Lama Ba. Rod Vasei ran after him. Amalei told him, Ma'udach, what do you do? Amalei, Zilid of Salam Bacha. Come back to, go now and come back tomorrow. I'll tell you what I do. The Mocha Amalei, the next day, asked him, Ma'udach, what do you do? Amalei, Zanduk no ano. Look at Rashi. Shayme Beis Asurim. I'm a jail warden. Vasalma Gava Lechud, Vinashi Lechud. And I make sure they separate the men and the women. Uremina Puraye Ben Hani Lahani. And I put my own beds in between at night. Kech Lod Lesali Di Asura. So nobody should stop with the women. And when I see that the goyim want to start with a Jewish girl, I sacrifice myself and try and save this woman. There was once a Jewish girl, a Naira Marosa, and they put their eyes in her. Shakli dudayo de chamra v'shadlo b'shipula, and I poured some wine on her. V'amri, and I said, this nohi, it's she's menstruating. Why do you wear tzitzis? Why are you wearing black shoes? I want to be able to mill around the goyim. They should not know I'm Jewish. He said, look what he says like this. When I know this, want to have another gzera against the Jews, I quickly go tell the rabbanim, chachamim, and they daven, and they automatically rescind it. See how easy it is? They daven, they automatically rescind it. So my time came in. When I asked you today, why do you tell me come back tomorrow? Why don't you tell me today what you do? He said, because that was just at the time when I found out about another decree, and I said, I'm going to quickly go and tell the Chachamim so they should be mevatel. Where does this story happen? This happens in a vacuum. Stam story in the middle of nowhere in the Gemara about Xerus against the Jewish people, about rapes. What's going on over here? So the Darius HaShanim places this story in the time of the end of the Persian rule in the year 490 till the year 550, 560. There was an offshoot of the Persian religion. The Persian religion was Zoroastrian. And Zoroastrian had the good god and the bad god. That's what it had. And his host was a fellow came along at the end of the Persian rule, and his name was Mazdak. Mazdak the Elder, and his shita was, he said, that in order to suppress the bad god, in order to have the good god overcome the bad god, there's no use in trying to suppress one's feelings and one's desires and one's taivas. On the contrary, the more you suppress it, the more a person is going to want it, and therefore the more the evil is going to be in control of the good. Rather, he came with a new shita. He said, let's give the bad god whatever we want. And if we give it completely, at the end, the taivas are going to disappear, and then the good will prevail over the bad. So he promoted a form of... promoted a form of, you know, taivas hamamun, which means, I'm wealthy, I want your money. No! Everybody should be the same. Everybody can take from everybody else. There's no boundaries. Arias. Why your wife, my wife? Let's share everything together. Free love. Communism, free love. That's what he promoted. And it took a very strong root. It was the end of Zoroastrianism with Mazdak the Elder in the year 490. So much so that the Persian king, you know, subscribed to it. Obviously, this took place in Babylonia. That was a tremendous sakana for the Jewish people. It means there's free love. That's what he brings down. Look over here. This is also from Wikipedia. I mean, look what he writes over there about Mazdaism, Zoroastrianism. And then he writes 7a. A Zoroastrian philosopher known as Mazda the Elder, who taught a combination of altruism and hedonism. He directed his followers to enjoy the pleasure of life and satisfy their appetite in the highest degree with regard to eating and drinking in the spirit of equality, to aim at good deeds, to abstain from shedding blood and inflicting harm on others, and to practice hospitality without reservation. This doctrine was further developed by the much better known Mazdak the Younger. At later stages, the conservative Zoroastrian position accused Mazdak's followers of heresy and with abhorrent practices such as the shearing of women. In many ways, Mazdak's teaching can be understood as a call for social revolution, referred to as early communism. Him and his followers were also advocates of free love. In other words, that was the whole shita. Mazdak's teaching, look at number right before 70, acquired many followers to the point where even Kavad, ruling from 488 to 531, that's our time period, converted to Mazdakism. In other words, the ruler converted to that. They had all these, you know, bands of followers living in that area of the Jewish people. According to Darius Hashanah number 70, this story of Rebbe Broika took place in that time period. And you had this one few Jewish people trying to hold, you know, the Jewish people separate, hold them, you know, and somehow protect them from these marauding bands of people, and that became common society. So clearly, that's the time period that took place. That's the communism that he's talking about. That's who Mazucha was fighting against. We can't live in a country where everything is free. That's why they closed Pumbedisa. That's why they closed Sura. That's why they had no place to go. You're going to live in a society where everybody is hefka, everybody can do whatever they want. They couldn't stay there anymore. They had to go to another place and try and carve out literally their own independence where they're not subject, not to the king, not to his followers. And that was the difficult time that took place in Babel in those years. Started at 490, going all the way to 530, 540, and that's the inner turmoil that took place. Till they finally got to Peshawar, where first he had his, you know, he made his own little fiefdom, Mazucha. And then he was killed with his grandfather. But it had an effect, because the following year, the King Kovad was overthrown, and it was somewhat of a mini-revolution, and then things quieted down. So those 50, 60 years in Babel were very, very turbulent times, the time of the Rabbanus of Roy. In the year 560 and 570, things calmed down. That's when they opened up again Pumbedisa, and then things, you know, already went back more or less to normal. But that's why I think perhaps why Rabbanus of Roy, they did not, you know, continue or add on, because it was a very difficult time. They're going from place to place. They couldn't live their lives. The communities couldn't be. Imagine living in a society like that where it's sanctioned. It goes against everything what Yiddishkeit stands for. So they couldn't be in such places, or they had to be separate, or they had to maybe live alone or independent. They clearly could not live as a community, and therefore this was the difficult times, the persecutions that took place in the time of the Babylonians in the Rabbanus of Roy. The year 570 and 580, that's when things calm down, and that's really we find the next stage, which is the Rabbanim, the Goyinim, according to Avshir Goyinim. And the other Rabbanus of Roy still continued, but at least they moved back from Peshawar, they moved back to Pumbedisa, and they opened up Sura. And then they had already three big yeshivas, that Pumbedisa, that Sura, they had Mechuzah Nadah in the middle, and they had like the three yeshivas for quite a while. And then Peshawar fizzled out, they stayed with the two big yeshivas, but this time period of Rabbanus of Roy, that was a difficult time period, and that was when they were really going from place to place. Didn't have a place, they end up in Peshawar, and maybe that's why the Rabbanus of Roy didn't really, you know, they rather, maybe, you know, maybe it's, I'm thinking about even further than that. Maybe this was like, you know, well, if everything is hefker all over the place, and the society we live in is one big balagan, and there's communism, and everything's shared by everything, and there's free love, and everybody does whatever they want, We're going to take what we have and be misader it in its right order, right? We're the exact opposite. We make sure everything is misudar, and this is this, and this goes over here, and this belongs over here. The exact opposite of the society that they lived in. Maybe they felt a need that that's what they should be doing in order to counteract the culture that they were living in. The culture of communism, of free love, of freedom, of hefker, they wanted to be misader, which is the exact opposite, in order to counteract the time period that they're in. That's maybe a svara of Rabbanus of Roy, a reason why they conducted what they did in that time period, because of the political situation which took place in their time.
Yeah.
So Marzutra didn't...